Mr. Roberts, good morning again.
Good morning.
If you're ready.
I am. May it please the court, I represent Brian Marshall in this case. Mr. Likas and I are in the same position. Neither of us tried this case. His partner did. I didn't try the case at all. I think both of us come at it with maybe a little more subjectivity or objectivity than subjectivity. In any event, in this case, we raised four assignments of error that we believe the court made. There was a settlement, a Vioxx settlement, that the court determined a portion should be non-marital. We believe that that was error. We believe that the court misstated my client's income in calculating child support and alimony. We also believe that the court improperly allowed and relied on, very specifically, hearsay evidence in the form of a report from various physicians, affidavits, and a number of documents that were objected to on the basis of hearsay and foundation, but the court clearly relied on when he made his decision.
Well, doesn't the decree, which is a pretty lengthy...
Yes, it is.
Doesn't it actually say at page 23 of the decree, or page 45 of the transcript, the court did not need the settlement documents, Exhibit 81, to see and appreciate the serious nature of Amy's permanent injury?
That was only one factor of it. I agree that at trial, apparently, Ms. Govier had the witness testify or show how she was unable to use her hands, her left hand, I believe. But there was testimony about the work that she did as a hairdresser, even with one hand, that she didn't do it to make money, which was clear because she had $7,000, in gross income from her hairdressing, and $6,000 and change as expenses. So she made nothing, but she did it as a passion. She hadn't tried to find any other employment or anything of that nature. But the fact is that what he relied on for the purposes of setting this aside were numbers that were within that Exhibit 81 that were objected to on the basis of hearsay and foundation that substantiated, in his mind, medical bills that were paid, what her wages were, her loss of earnings were, things that weren't in evidence otherwise.
Okay, so we're in a court of equity,
yes,
right? And we're dealing with a settlement agreement that does not specify what the award or what the money is for.
Exactly.
Right? We don't know if it's to compensate for disfiguration, inconvenience, any of that versus wages. And wages would be attributable to the marriage, at least the part that would be attributable to
under party
when you were married.
Yes.
So who gets to decide? I mean, who gets to decide what facts are important to determine how that money should be allocated?
Well, and I don't know that this is a perfect answer to that, but when I've had divorce cases before where someone has been injured during the divorce or during the marriage, I tell them specifically to have the attorney for the personal injury case delineate in the settlement agreement what is for what, because there's a loss of consortium claim that my client would have. But the bottom line is that if they don't do that, it's the, in this case, Ms. Marshall's burden to prove to the court how much each of those were, what the wages were, what the pain and suffering was, lost wages, what the pain and suffering was, etc., and medical bills. And that was not done. I mean, she could have brought in her personal injury attorney who could have said, this is how we calculated it, and would have had some evidence for that. They didn't do that. And under the party case, the way that the court looks at those lost wages is even if she separated all of that and said, this much is for my future lost wages, the injury occurred in 2003. They didn't get divorced in 2014, and under party, the court said that those wages that were potentially future lost wages were basically past lost wages by the time the divorce came. And so that was the past lost wages under Part A were considered as marital assets. So there wasn't anything to go forward and claim, okay, now I've lost income in the future, and therefore that should be a non-marital asset. So even if she had brought a person in, I don't think that she could have substantiated that claim.
Mr. Roberts,
yes, sir.
Just to back up.
Sure.
The presumption is that the proceeds are part of the marital estate. That's the
correct.
Legal presumption.
Right.
And then, in this case, the wife has the burden to show how those proceeds were allocated or should be allocated to, if any extent, as non-marital, correct?
Yes.
Here, the judge comes up with a figure of about $179,000 or so that he says are non-marital assets, correct?
Correct.
And that's basically the remodel and the mortgage, isn't it?
Well, they used, I don't know that it's, it, that's how he broke it out. The mortgage was $84,000 they paid off. There was no argument
right.
about that. $90,000 for the remodeling, $37,000 to Elite Fitness, $20,000.
Well, that was allocated then to the husband.
Elite Fitness was, but he got, yes, it was.
Right.
Yes.
But.
As guess, a marital asset.
Right. I guess my point is, first of all, it's presumed that all of this is marital property. You're saying there's no evidence on how to allocate what should go as non-marital and why.
Correct.
I mean, you're alluding to, or not alluding to, but talking about the loss to the marital estate of her lost wages. I mean, that alone, her lost wages for 10 years would surpass the amount of the total award, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. The only place that he found a number for lost wages was within that Exhibit 81 that was not placed into evidence.
But I'm saying that...
Or it was placed into evidence over objection.
But if her income, as I recall, was somewhere in the neighborhood of $43,000...
From Exhibit 81.
Right. But even if you take that amount times 10 years, the proceeds still wouldn't cover all that, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, but wouldn't you have to look at her lifespan from the time of the injury when she was 34 until retirement? So to the extent those proceeds were for lost wages, it would be for those 33 years from the time of the injury to her retirement age, right?
Under Pardee, you wouldn't. If Pardee, the analytical approach that Pardee uses, says that because in the Pardee case, in 5 years, they calculated exactly what he lost in his wages and future lost wages. But by the time they came to the decree, those were past lost wages. So you can't, under Pardee, you wouldn't do what you're saying. And I understand, does it seem fair? No, it probably doesn't seem fair. And I think that really is what hit the court on both the determination of the non-marital portion of that settlement. He picked a number because he thought it was fair, because he saw how much she was harmed. But I think he also did that when he determined the alimony award, where he said basically from that decree, or from that Exhibit 81, that this was caused by my client's father giving her Vioxx that was not prescribed. And he quotes it in the decree several times.
But the judge actually says in the decree, the settlement does not come close to compensating Amy for her future pain, suffering, disfigurement, and disability. Doesn't the court have the discretion to say, look, this whole award, frankly, should have been hers personally and not part of the marital estate? Isn't that the judge's discretion based on the evidence that Mrs. Marshall provided, her mom provided, and what the judge talks about he could see himself in the course of 2 days of trial? Isn't that the judge's discretion to decide that?
Well, I guess it's his discretion to make that determination, but then he has to look at the facts and say, okay, if I decide that this settlement, a part of that should not be a marital asset, then I have to apply the law to those facts. And what evidence is there to establish how much should be? Basically, in my opinion, and Judge Otepe is a great judge, I'd like to try all my cases in front of him, but I think in this case, he gave away what he was really doing. And he was just basically, in my opinion, I think he was picking a number because he felt sorry for her, and I understand that. It's a terrible situation for her, but I think he just picked a number, and then he said that Vioxx, in the alimony part of it, that Vioxx was a problem was caused by Mr. Marshall's father, and therefore I'm going to give her an alimony award of 21 years till he's 65 years old.
So if he hadn't said that, if all he had said is what I just read to you out of the decree, that the award was, or the money was not sufficient to cover her personal losses, would you not be able to argue that then that there was an abuse of discretion?
Yes,
that's all he said?
But I think because he put it in there, now we know what he was thinking. And he was thinking along those lines. He was thinking he felt sorry for her. She needed money going forward, et cetera. And here's the cause of it, so here's what I'm going to do. And had he not said that, I agree. I think he was probably just too wordy. He was too verbose with his quotes from Exhibit 81 that wasn't received into evidence that he used then to establish what he was doing. And I just don't think that there was the evidence there to do that.
Counsel,
yes.
And I guess I'm speaking with the choir. What I was trying to get at before, I don't think I said it very well. One of the principles driving the law in this area is, you know, was the marital estate harmed? And that's what I was getting at when I say,
okay.
You know, she had income that was lost for 10 years, and the marital estate was harmed to that extent, arguably, correct?
Correct.
And when the judge came up with these numbers he did, the percentages he did, what was the basis for that?
That's my point. If you can't find a basis for it, if you can't go back and find the evidence that says here's how I did it, based on the fact that this is what the settlement was, if you can't tie that up, I think it's an abuse of discretion for him just to take a number and say this is what it's going to be. And I think that's what he did in both cases, in the alimony and the property settlement.
I mean, he could have grabbed any number then.
He could have grabbed any number, and I still think that that's an abuse of discretion, especially because of what he put in the decree. I think my argument would have been much harder if, as counsel, as Your Honor said, my argument would have been much harder if he just made determinations like a lot of the judges do and just say, this is what I'm doing. Then we have no idea what he's actually thinking. I think now, know what he's thinking, and I think that we can point to exactly why he did it and that was not supported by the facts.
Okay, thank you. Counsel, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Anthony Likas, and I'm representing the appellee, Amy Marshall. First off, I'd like to point out that party of the case, the judge relied on the case that Mr. Roberts is arguing, the case that I hammered home in my brief. The facts of that case, there wasn't this tidy breakdown that Mr. Roberts is saying is necessary before we can say what part of this personal injury, or in this case a products liability case, can be set off as a non-marital asset. Here's the problem. I agree with Mr. Roberts. If I've got a current client that comes in, has a personal injury, I can say, hey, you got to make sure they break these down for your case. This is 11 years the settlement was taken before the divorce. Divorce wasn't in anybody's mind at that. I don't know how they could have got that, and I think that's part of why the court ruled they did in party is, okay, so we've got this analytical approach that has these strict things that need to be adhered to in order to award a party a non-marital, somebody who suffers a catastrophic injury whose life is never the same. The reality is that that's never going to happen. And then...
What's never going to happen?
That... If it's somebody that has this injury prior to filing for divorce, at least in my experience, I haven't seen it broke down the way they talk like that. And I think it's just people don't anticipate doing that.
But couldn't you bring in the personal injury lawyer to explain how the settlement was arrived at in terms of how much we attributed to lost wages, how much was for pain and suffering?
In an ideal situation, yes, and I don't want to get too much into this because it wasn't really in the record.
Right, and I'm not asking you.
Stuff was reached out for that, and I don't think it was possible in this case. And I suppose I leave it at that because
sure.
I don't want to.
But Mr. Likas, isn't it just as reasonable for a judge to conclude that none of this is non-marital property because the marital estate had been damaged or suffered loss because of her lost wages for 10 years? Isn't that just equally as plausible?
I think it's equally as plausible. I don't know that because he didn't do that, that amounts to an abuse of discretion.
So a judge just gets to pick?
Well, I think because he's the trier of fact. He's witnessed everything. He saw what condition she's actually in, and I think Judge Bishop had a good point there where we're talking about 20 more years that this woman has lived before she'd reached retirement age. So basically, no. We can't hide around the fact this was a poor settlement that she got, and that's why we're here, because...
Mm-hmm. Wasn't enough to go around.
Well, and, you know, whether it was because she didn't have a prescription, whatever. We had to deal with the hand we were dealt there on how much it was. Our position.
The trial judge heard the evidence, saw her. She talked about all of her permanent injuries and obstacles for her lifetime, correct?
And absolutely. I mean, when this happened, she was a vibrant 34-year-old who was working fairly full-time as a hairdresser, testified and also demonstrated the physical limitations she has now. And part of it is she's a proud woman. I mean, she wants to keep doing the hairdressing. That's what she knows how to do. She can't do it to the extent that she did before.
I think I recall in the record also that she received Social Security disability pretty quickly after her injury. Would that be correct?
Yeah, certainly much quicker than I'm used to people seeing it. And she's still getting, I think, approximately $1,500 a month that she's going to get, you know, for the rest of her life for that.
So she wasn't without income for her family during that 10 years after her injury?
No, it might have been only 6 months if my memory serves me right, before she started collecting on that. So there was some income coming in. Again, I'd just point out that I think the party case says we're not going to hold you to this standard, but you have to come in and show. This is how much was for lost wages during the marriage. This is how much is for future wages. This is pain and suffering. I think the judge is very clear that she suffered a lot of pain and suffering. And
no doubt. But what evidence is there that underpins the conclusion that $179,000 and change was the intended amount of the settlement to compensate her for the injury?
Can I stand up here and say that there's exactly $179,000 for that figure? I can't. What I can say is I think he made the judgment call of, I have the option of saying none of this is marital. I have the option of saying a portion of this is marital. And the number he settled on, that roughly $179,000, was almost 50% of, claiming 50% of it was marital, 50%
of it was.
Doesn't
it correspond closely to the mortgage and the home improvement?
Actually, it pretty much, it's exact. So.
Yeah.
But could the judge, as Mr. Roberts was saying, maybe less would have been better, less said would have been better. Couldn't the judge have picked whatever number he wanted based on the evidence he saw to decide what amount should be attributed to her personal pain and suffering?
I think he could have picked between zero and $330,000 of it.
Right.
And he came to roughly the halfway point. Mr. Marshall was awarded Elite Fitness, which was paid for entirely from the settlement proceeds. He was awarded a savings account that at least started with $20,000 of the settlement proceeds. And there's also an amount, we have a gap between this $330,000 settlement proceeds minus what she got, minus what Mr. Marshall got, which the only conclusion basically he can come to is that it was spent during the marriage and presumably for the benefit of both parties. So I don't think she's getting a windfall on this in any way, shape, or form. I certainly think it's equitable. I don't think it's an abuse of discretion that we can reverse his findings upon. As far as the alimony argument, I will point out in appellant's brief, at one point they say $2,000 a month is way too much for her, but then at page 39 they indicate in the case at bar, the alimony obligation failed in its purpose to provide for the continued maintenance and support of Amy because her expenses in the Dorcas home of $4,994 a month remain underfunded by at least $1,000 per month. To me, that's almost saying that's not enough alimony. Now, I'm not here saying I cross-appealed asking for more, but to me it seems interesting. At one point, we're saying it's too much alimony for her. On the other hand, we're saying that's not even putting her in a position where she needs to be. And if there's no more questions, I will conclude with that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Did Mr. Roberts have time left? Okay. Thank you both, counsel. You're excused. Next matter is Hillier versus Midwest.